Hello, friends, and welcome to All Terrain Podcast, Episode 9. This is technically the 10th show. If you've been here from Episode 0, thanks for sticking with us. Hope you've liked the format so far, and if not, you're in luck, because it's changing. Up until now, we've had a set format, and every episode has had the same set of questions and then different answers from Overlanders. The plan now is for Harry Wagner to come back and help me to do a recap episode to discuss what all we've learned from these interviews so far. With that, I'd like to add a new type of episode to the show, one of a handful of formats that'll hopefully hold both your interest and mine. As always, thanks for supporting the show by checking out the stickers and other merch on the website and reading the show notes that have links to photos, videos, and more. All right, here's All Terrain Podcast number 9, Forerunner Chat number 1. The Toyota 4Runner is the king of SUVs, the champagne of overlanding rigs, the Ayatollah of bumpy roads. When it comes to reliability, comfort, and capability, for the money, you can't beat a used 4Runner. So today we're introducing a new segment of the show dedicated to sharing tips, tricks, and trivia relating to the venerable Toyota 4Runner. Joining me today are David Boucher and Ray Tomlinson. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. Good to be here.
So, these guys are high-functioning weekend warriors, adventurers, and in general all-terrain types, and third-gen 4Runner drivers. David's my brother-in-law and was the first of us to get a 4Runner. Is that right? You've never had one before, Ray?
Okay. No, that's correct. This is my first.
Dave's got a 1998 Limited. Mostly stock overall with some key mods accessorized and customized how you guys use it. You can see David and Darkstar, the Black Limited, on the Death Valley Adventure Series on our YouTube channel, All Terrain Family. Ray has a 2003, is that right?
2002
SR5.
Correct.
Started life pretty plain last year when you got it, but now I see you around. It's a adventure mobile. It's got racks and stuff on top and looks a little more reasonable.
Well, you know, the best advice I got was go find one that the soccer mom owned.
That's right.
Go find one that the soccer mom has been driving for the last 10, 15 years, and that's the one you want. So, yeah, that's the one I found.
For sure. That one's it's in good shape.
I helped Ray change the oil on it, and I was impressed by it. There's not one sagebrush scrape on the bottom of that truck.
Really?
It's never been off.
Changed since then.
It's never been off road.
Oh yeah.
So, let's go around real quick and see what we have to talk about today. David, what do you got?
Well, the last few things that I've done to make the truck a little more, you know, easier for me to use was the I did the hitch flip mod.
Right.
That wasn't my idea. I kind of ran into it on one of the Toyota forums,
right.
And it was something I did just to make my trailer sit level, and then okay. after doing it, I realized that would also give a departure angle more clearance.
I'm sure.
And then what else have I done? I did my an extra handle to the driver's side right above your head there,
right. Because not every 4Runner has a grab handle on the driver's side.
No, they're all the way around the vehicle except for there. So I went to the wrecking yard and pulled a couple off, and I'm all dialed in there now.
Sweet. And you also have a pretty sweet cargo deck in the back. And so we'll come back around to all that stuff in a minute. Ray, you've got racks and boxes and some cool Plasti-Dip wheels going, right?
Yeah, most of my work so far has been pretty much on the aesthetics end of things, for sure, as far as got my own tint installed on there with Dave's help, so blacked out all the windows all the way around, which is nice. I like the security aspect, too, that you can't see into the car as well, and then, I did the Plasti-Dip with Dave's help again, and the wheels turned out really well, and they're holding up, and yeah,
cool.
The roof box was probably the best add so far.
Sweet. I didn't mention it before, but I have my 4Runner is a third gen 99 SR5. I've got the 5-speed with the electronic locking differential, and it's pretty stock, but I have some simple suspension mods. But I want the thing I brought to talk about today is the door lock actuator that I recently repaired, and I did a roof rail extension, which I haven't seen too much about that one. And then also, I've become a new convert to the $14 Amazon trim panel removing tools. So we'll get to that later on. So getting back to David, tell us about the hitch flip. What is the hitch flip?
So the hitch flip on a lot of the 4Runners, the hitch where you put the receiver in is actually below the actual hitch itself. And by just unbolting that piece and flipping it over and cutting out a section of the bumper, you're able to gain, I don't know, maybe 4 inches of clearance
it's
back
significant.
There. Yeah, it is. And that, you know, that's the only place I've ever dragged the truck.
Yeah.
Is on the hitch there.
Yeah.
So since I've flipped it over, I haven't noticed dragging anything back there.
Yeah, so we did that Death Valley trip, and on Dedicare Canyon, coming down that one rock step, I don't think you dragged on that, but I did a lot.
Yeah.
So the yours is a 98, right? And that's the hitch that came on your truck, right? As far as you know.
As far as I know, that's the one that was on it at the dealership, yeah.
Yeah. So I have a 99, and if you've got a 4Runner, yours is probably like this too. You can't flip it. Mine was like that too. It's welded on the side, whereas pre-99, they were bolted. So there were 3 bolts on the side, and they're symmetrical, which is that's what allows you to unbolt it, just flip it over and go. And on yours, you just did that, and you cut out pretty much exactly out of the bumper for the hitch.
Yeah, I just measured with a plumb bob and a level and measured a couple times, and then it's really actually the bumper material is quite thin, and I just took an angle grinder to it and went for it.
Yeah.
And cut it out and used a hacksaw to get to the very corners, and it was fairly simple. The stressful part was actually just cutting into the bumper.
And was there wasn't anything behind the face of the bumper to worry about?
No, there was nothing.
I think that's
there.
Different on the 99 and after, because I looked up under mine and there seems to be some sort of bracketry of some kind behind
there is.
That
you can't
bumper.
Get your hand all the way behind it. I've done that too.
Okay, so I think I recently went to the salvage yard and bought a hitch off a 97, and it's on the truck now. So I just need to go do the flip it around and measure and cut the thing out.
Just cut the bracket out.
That's what I was thinking. I just cut the bracket out because honestly, that bumper or the receiver is in the place of the bumper, and so nothing's going to encroach on that area,
right?
In any way, you know, because that hitch is there.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about the bracketry of the bumper. Plus, the bumper on the third gens is mounted to the body, not the frame, anyway.
Yeah, I was a little quick to get my hitch put on there. I would have looked a little harder for an old Toyota one to get on there, just for the security of it, or the safety aspect.
Right.
It's a bigger piece of metal back there if anything does happen where you get rear-ended or something. I've heard that's protected many a 4Runner.
For sure. And, you know, I kind of like the 99 and newer trailer hitch that I had originally has an oval cutout for, you know, like the tie-down, like if it were to go onto a flatbed truck or a flatbed tow truck.
Right.
It has an oval cutout for a hook, whereas the pre-99 actually have a angled D-ring that you can hook to on both sides.
Yeah.
And it has another bolt on both sides. The 99 and newer has 3 bolts, whereas the 99 or 98 and previous has 4 bolts.
Mm-hmm.
So I figure that's, I don't know what the decision was, but it's got to be better. It certainly is hard to get those bolts off of there.
I watched the guy put them on, and he had handmade tools that he made just to hold on to certain nuts and screws when he got back into some of those areas.
Right.
But they were literally handmade. It looked like duct tape and pieces of wood and something with a magnet on it as well to hold it in place. But basically, your fingers aren't long enough to get into those areas.
Well, I went to the salvage yard and I got a hitch, and I was there watching him take it off the truck, and so I got the bolts, I got the tie down D rings, and the nuts that have there's a nut welded to a piece of metal.
Mm. And so you just slide those back in there and feed it in so you don't have to make your handmade tools.
Oh, that's...
Tab, what do they call it? Tab nuts or something?
I know it's, yeah, exactly. I know what you're talking about.
Smart.
So the other thing that, David, you built for your Forerunner with a mix of welder and angle grinder and leftover shelving that you found, like, Craigslist or something?
You're talking about the platform
cargo
deck?
Yeah, your cargo deck.
So that started off as actually just wanting to... I had the idea that the wheel wells are taking up space for when I want to put stuff back there. Mm-hmm. You know, you put your cooler or whatever there, and you have the 6 to 8 inches on either side of dead space. So I kind of built one out of wood that... gave me an idea that yes, it would work, and yes, it would make a big platform, and I gained that extra space over the wheel wells. And so the wooden one worked, so I went to the metal one because I want it to be thinner, and actually it's lighter. But yeah, that was just out of materials that I scavenged and cut up and welded together with my handler, you know, glue stick welder, and I've been really happy with it.
It works. It's really nice. It's such a good design. I copied it from mine.
And me.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I took an old table and Dave cut four legs off basically.
Nice.
And it stands up about 10 inches tall there, just enough to get all the stuff. I like it, again, at the ski hill and stuff like that. Everything goes underneath that bench. You can't see anything inside the car at that point. And so, yeah, helps hide some stuff too.
And then when you put a cooler on top, you can slide it all the way to the wall.
Yeah, it's right against the window.
Yeah, it's a lot better use of space.
It just happened to be that it also, I used that same platform in our Outback when we go road tripping.
That same platform fits between the wheel wells of the Outback?
The Outback is actually wider.
Is it really?
And so it fits in there just fine. Huh. You know, I have to make one for the car, but
that's
yeah.
That's funny. So tell us more about the grab handle thing. So the driver's side actually has mounting holes for the grab handle, even though they're not, none of them have it.
So if you feel up on the headliner, you can feel the little dimples where the nuts are behind the headliner. Huh. And, you know, in Japan, it's a Japanese truck. The driver's side is on the other side of the vehicle.
Huh.
And so my thinking is that, you know, there's probably a safety reason for not having the handle there on the driver's side. And so they don't put it in. Although there is one
forward
on the pillar, your windshield
pillar,
post.
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, that a lot of vehicles used to have. Of course, maybe it was just they figured it was unsafe.
I thought I might bump my head on it, actually, when I was first thinking about putting it in, like if you're just getting in too quick or something like that. But it's up high enough that, it's no worries at all.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know. It's good to know that those tabs are there, and you can just go to a salvage yard and, like, even if a vehicle is totally destroyed, that grab handle is going to be fine.
If someone like me didn't take it first, yes.
Yeah, and so you've been going to salvage yards a lot recently. What advice do you have about salvage yards in general?
Well, always bring your toolkit, because even if you're just looking to see what's there, you're going to find something that you wish you, at least a screwdriver.
Right.
Because you're going to find either something you think you need, or I like to go to the junkyard to look to see what is behind whatever I'm wondering what's there on my truck.
Oh, huh.
So then something that I have coming up in the future that I want to do is put a rack against the window of the, against the back window sort of on the side. But anyway, I want to see what's back there. So I went to a junkyard and actually kind of just ripped the paneling away so I could see what was behind there. That way I'm not doing it to my own car and breaking stuff and drilling into wires or doing whatever.
That's a good point. I went to the airport salvage here in Reno, where they have like, I don't know, 20 or 30 Forerunners of all varying kinds. And I went to get a seatbelt for the driver's side seatbelt, which is different on the 99 and newer than it is on 98 and older. But yeah, I wanted to see how hard it was to do that seatbelt. And it was easy, super easy. I watched the guy take it out. And the only thing is, like, those guys, they don't have the plastic trim panel remover tool. So they use a screwdriver for all that stuff. And so if like you should get one of those kits and take it with you, even if you go to a shop, salvage yard, where they disassemble the stuff for you, because they're going to use a screwdriver and mess all the stuff up. But it was nice because when I was I bought the wrong one. I had to go back, but they traded it out, which is nice. But in the process of removing one of the plastic trim pieces, I broke it. But, you know, like all those little plastic trim pieces are good on all those old trucks. And I don't think anybody ever wants them. Yeah. So just go there and buy some. Like I bought the seat belt and they just gave me the trim piece.
Wait, you had the trim tool, but you still broke a piece of trim?
Yeah. Well, the problem is that most of the trim pieces on the 4Runner are good quality things. Like a lot of them are little metal spring clips. And but you know, going in and out of that, it was the little kick panel on the door, and so it was cracked, and so it didn't have enough strength to pull itself out, so I broke it. But I got a new one, and it's the same color. It's like oak, I think, is the color, the trim body trim color.
4Runner oak.
So there's that. All right. Well, I'm trying to wake my laptop up here. What so Ray, tell us about racks. Like you got your 4Runner, didn't have any racks on it except for the factory bars. What do you have now?
I ended up getting a Yakima system and got their aero bars on there. So the not their standard round bars, but the elliptical ones.
Bar.
Yeah, I don't know that it makes a big difference, but they're black like the rest of the truck. It makes it look nice.
Oh, they're black. They used to be silver.
Well, I think you can get them in silver too, but the steel ones, they come in a coated black. So
steel, even.
Yeah, see,
I don't know about all this stuff. I don't work at REI.
So yeah, that was a nice first piece to that, and then ended up. I was really looking at all the different rooftop boxes. I had borrowed Dave's to go up to Montana last year, and I went through some pretty big high wind areas through Idaho and stuff like that, where you could really feel it tugging on the car and stuff and making you leery about whether or not you're still going to have that rooftop box when you got to your destination. But anyway, I ended up going with one of Thule's Low Pro boxes, and I really like it. It looks good on the truck. It doesn't have that big bubble aspect.
Yeah,
it's a little wider than taller. And what I found is I never use that stack height anyway, because it's hard to really close the thing when you use the stack height. So now I just keep everything bedroll size or sleeping bag size, basically. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it takes all the camp gear, all the bedding stuff. The stove goes up there pretty much, so that all we have inside the truck is coolers, our clothing bags, and the dog.
Right.
Is really the only thing going
inside.
It's
just the two of you.
Right, exactly. So we have a two-seater 4Runner.
Yeah. Did you take the seats out?
I took the seats out completely, yeah, because we got that 80-pound Shepherd in the back seat, so she gets the full back area there, which is nice.
Now, So one thing that's kind of frowned upon in the overland world is roof boxes. And I know we've all been using roof boxes for a really long time. And I haven't had too many issues or problems with them. What do you – I mean, you sell these every day, right? I mean, what's the deal with roof boxes? They're plastic. It seems like they shouldn't be good, but I think they are.
Well, it's one of those things. To me, it's six of one, half a dozen another. You could go with just your standard cage up top there, and then you're going to have to put everything into duffel bags or into plastic containers or whatever to protect it from the elements up there. So you're kind of back to where you started. So, you know, again, on the security side of things, when we're at camp, everything that is out of sight, you know, is locked up in that rooftop box. So I kind of like that aspect, especially in winter with snowboards and skis and stuff like that. It makes even more sense. I could go to one of the cages just as easy in summer. Maybe it even is a little bit easier and getting in and out of that box there. But again, with that low profile aspect on this Thule Low Pro, I think it's called the Low Pro, but I like how minimal it is and aerodynamic that way, and it still swallows just a ton of gear.
Yeah,
and you don't notice when I have the windows down and I'm on a dirt road, I can hear it bouncing around a little bit up there. But for as long as I've been working, I've never seen anybody return one that's been destroyed from four-wheel driving.
Yeah, no, they're amazingly robust.
Yeah,
what they are. So a trick that I learned when we did that Death Valley trip, I was watching the video, and my box, at least, because I have the Skybox 16, whatever it is, it's freaking huge. And so there's probably like 150 pounds of stuff in it. So when the truck sways back and forth, the box was moving back and forth, even as clamped as it could be. So if you take, if you have round bars, you take the universal snap arounds and you snap them around and crank them down to hold the feet in place. Yeah. And so then it just holds it in place.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So you could, I don't know if the arrow bars, I'm sure they have those. They have the snap arounds that you mount a ski rack to or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Get some of those and spin them down and locks it in place if you see it moving, if it's a problem.
And actually, that's a nice part on those ones is it's a, I'm pretty sure it's a steel piece, those wrap arounds. It's not even plastic. So the ones that go into the towers, basically, that's a metal piece. And so if you get a couple more of those, it's got a spot where you can pull a screw through to tighten it down so that you can either well, what we're thinking about doing in the future is welding something to those tie downs basically so that I can get a shovel and an axe up or something like that, but we'll use those metal pieces.
Cool.
Well, you can't mount a tent on top of your car top box.
No,
but I could see that being down.
That is a problem. Yeah,
my mom's friend has a she had one of those clamshell ones, fiberglass, on top of her Land Cruiser. And she called me up all excited, wanting to give it to me. But the thing is only 6 feet long, and I'm 6 feet tall. There's no way I could sleep in that.
Yeah, and, you'd be pushing the edge of it.
I don't know. I just don't... I don't know that I could just get up in the middle of the night and scurry down the side of the truck easily and not kill myself.
Because let's face it, we're all getting up in the middle of the night to go pee. So you also plasti-dipped your wheels. How plasti dip is one of those things that comes up as a sort of a solve-all for ease of making your truck look badass.
It covers rust.
You know, for $20 it's a high amount of badass. I mean,
it's true.
Yeah.
You didn't pull the wheels off. Did you do any masking?
I didn't do as much masking as I should have. I should have covered up the tires entirely. I noticed after we got done, it turned out really well. We did take the tires off of there, and wheels off the truck, right? And so we got those off of there, and I should have just taped off more of the rubber, basically, because I can still, to this day, I can see some of my masking points on there a little bit. So just proof that I did it myself.
Have you tried to rub those off and make it come off? Or?
Yeah, like 14 different ways. It's amazing how
it's there for
well.
You. Yeah, that, it probably sticks like stink to the rubber of the tire.
That's what I learned, yes, most definitely. So, in hindsight, a little bit more taping there, and it would have looked a little bit cleaner. But once the tires are a little bit dirty anyway, you only notice it when the truck is clean, basically.
Right.
And once there's a little dirt on there, you can't tell.
So plasti-dip is, I'm obviously use matte black, because that's obviously the only color that any sane person would want to use.
Of course, dip. Yeah.
But I have, on my 4Runner, I took the stock wheels. I actually bought a second set of stock wheels, and I had them powder coated, and that was, I want to say, $30 per wheel. About $36. No, I think it was $60 a wheel. It was a lot. It was like over $200 to have them all done. So, and they don't look as good now as like I had the wheels powder coated, and then I had the caps. I plasti dipped the caps, and they looked the same. It was exact same coloring.
Right.
The caps look great now, still. The wheels are all dingy and gray. So
and you got some bites on them.
I have some rock bites.
So would you just plasti dip up, clean them up?
Well, I haven't done that. You know, I mean, I think what I could do now is just put one coat of plasti dip on the wheel because they're already black. But it almost seems like if you want something that's going to look awesome and be durable long term, just do the plasti dip, because then every other year you go back over it with the spray can, and it looks brand new again. Whereas powder coat, I guess unless you get some sort of clear coat with it, is going to fade and look bad in a couple years' time. I've only had my 4Runner for 3 years, so and I haven't had the plastic the powder coat on it that long. So
yeah, you just got to be careful. I I showed my buddy how I did the wheels on my truck, and he's like, man, I'm going to do that on my truck. And a couple hours later, he's like, yeah, I did the running bars on there. I'm going to work my way up to the roof rack next. And I was, you know, you just got to call yourself off a little bit there and just not overplasty dip.
Well, what I like doing is, you know, every time I see Dave's wife's car, I look for more things that have been plasti-dipped, because he'll go and plasti-dip stuff and then see how long it takes her to notice it.
I did kind of said, got to a point on her car that, yeah, this is good enough. There was a lot of chrome that needed to be blacked out, and the plasti-dip did it perfect.
Yeah. And it looks good. It's a brown Outback, and with the license plate is brown out.
What?
which is great. Anyway,
that's when our kid was in diapers. It was a double entendre there, double meaning.
There was a lot of brownouts with us.
Well, he's out of diapers now, so we got a new plate.
Oh, did you? What is it now? I guess I haven't noticed.
The MV Ski.
MV Ski, that's right. I still like brownout.
I thought that was pretty good, too.
We still call it the brownout.
That
was my first foray into dipping. A friend of mine turned me onto it, and I went to town on the Outback.
It looks pretty cool. You've done the wheels and then some of the chrome window trim.
The chrome window trim. I did the light bezels on the front and blacked out the front chrome grill, but left the logos.
Yeah.
And de-logoed the back. And
it looks great. You know, I mean, it looks great and it's really durable. The problem is that when it gets chipped, it's really obvious because what you're covering up is chrome. So you just kind of got to go over it every year or so.
Yeah, I just tape off a little section. I don't even do the whole section. I just tape off where the blem is and put a few coats on and call it good.
Yeah, and it looks fine. It looks great. So tinting, Dave, you've been tinting stuff for a long time, but you just tinted all of the windows or just the back ones? Because the Forerunners come with pretty good tinting already.
We did the driver's and passenger side, then on front and rear, and then the rear window. The very rear window, and then the rear quarter panel windows had already been done on that truck.
Is that difficult on this vehicle?
You know, it takes a minute to make sure you've got a good game plan for what you do, because it's a time frame that you're working in. You got to be quick with it before things start drying up and settling in there. So you've got to get it in place kind of quick. And then once you get it in place, it's all about getting all the moisture and all the bubbles out of there as quick as possible.
Because you spray it down with water or something?
You spray down the windows with water. You spray down the film with water. Mm-hmm. And then you get those two to adhere together, basically, and it'll float there to a certain degree until you get it right into the right spot. And once you float it into the perfect spot, that's basically where you start in the middle and start pushing everything to the outside edges there. My front windows turned out great. I'm really happy with the driver's and passenger side. My rear window I'll probably have to redo fairly soon because it didn't sit quite right in the track there, and I already lost like one corner where I had to cut a little bit of a way because it started to pull off a little bit.
Right.
You can't tell unless the window's actually down. When it's all the way up and in its set position, you can't even tell that it's starting to lose one corner there. But that's it. All said and done, I was really happy with the way that turned out. I thought I was going to be kind of... I drove Dave's truck before with the rear window all blacked out, and it's kind of dark, but it's like he said, you kind of get used to it, and you just look for things differently out the back window.
Right. It's really nice, though, to have... I mean, mine just has the factory tint right now, which I never had before, and it's really nice to have that on road trips. It keeps the vehicle a lot cooler.
Yeah.
And
all your gear in back, and especially because that's where you got the coolers, too.
Yeah. I should black out my back windows.
It's nice you don't have, you know, high beams in your rear view.
Yeah. I hate high beams. So things I had to talk about. So number one is the trim panel tools. I got this set. It's like in a little tool roll, and you roll it out, and there's, I don't know, a dozen little plastic trim tools, plastic levers. It's like there's little plastic levers, little plastic
like
fork shape things. Yeah, the kit came with all of the plastic things and then this metal like fork thing that you can use.
Spa.
Yeah, like a cat's paw that you can use to pull out the bigger the bigger, I don't even know what they're called, the plastic push pin things, kind of like the things that you that hold the little skirts and the wheel wells in, stuff like that, is $14 or $17 or something. It was a ridiculously cheap thing, and I use it every time I pull trim pieces off, like to pull the center console panel off when I installed my CB, and then I used it to pull like the little button that holds that covers the bolt on the seatbelt. There's one of the tools is like a little knife, a little plastic knife, and it's soft plastic, so it will mar, it will deform, but it won't deform the plastic body panel trim pieces. So, you know, it's a trade-off there, but yeah. It's definitely worth having. If you're going to have one of these Forerunners and be removing trim panel tools to get into the headliner or whatnot, it's definitely worth having. The other cool thing I did recently was I did a roof rail extension, which I think all of the Forerunners have the same, all of the third gens have the same roof rail, but it only goes to, you know, it's like on the back two-thirds of the truck.
Yeah, right to the back of the front doors.
Yeah. So I wanted to be able to put the roof box that's always on my truck farther forward to mount a basket that Dave found for me at... Where did you find those?
I just find stuff.
He finds stuff.
People throw stuff away that I... Especially if it's metal, I'll take it.
It's a really nice little wire basket. It's light and it's powder-coated. Yeah, so I made this basket. I wanted that to sit directly behind the roof box, sort of like in the slipstream. And so I read up on one of the forums. I read this guy had a post that he... No, I think it was Reddit or something. I don't remember what it was. But this guy had gone to the salvage yard, bought the roof rails off of 4Runner, had to buy both of them. And didn't want one of them, so I, for the price of shipping, he sent me one of his roof rails. So that's where I got that one, and it's got three or four bolt holes in it. And so I just cut it in half. I just cut it exactly in half with a grinder, and then pulled the plastic caps off of the existing roof rails, the little plastic aero ramp caps, and then I used a straight edge to sort of line it up in line with the existing one, and drilled some holes and pulled down the headliner and got some nuts, some 10 millimeter nuts or whatever in there, and bolted the thing down to the roof. And I used big washers. It's at least as secure as what's in the back. I mean, what's in the back, they have a little piece of metal welded there with a captive nut. So in the front, I have three bolts holding it down, and I have it glued down with silicone adhesive, and it's all sealed up, and it's good to go. And so now I can mount a roof rack way far forward, and it looks ridiculous without the thing behind it. So
I think you just took the box and stuff off. I think it looks cool.
You think
to actually see what the, because you didn't really see it because it was kind of hidden, right, with all the stuff on the roof.
I actually took that off. I took the roof rack off for ski season, or the roof box off, because I like to use the other roof box for ski season. But then I was going into a parking garage this morning, and I took all the stuff off because I didn't want to rake it off on there. But it works really well. It's really easy to do if you can get over the fact that you're drilling into the top of your car.
You know, I've been thinking about doing that. I've been looking at mine, and I can do it. I have a sunroof, and so I'm sure there's a warning somewhere not to do that, but... I don't read them.
Yeah, don't read warnings. Nobody would do that.
But, you know, just for to get everything more symmetrical looking on the car, and not everything all over the back.
Right. It still doesn't stick out. The roof box still doesn't stick out so far that I can actually see it. But it's there. And so I have a video on the channel that shows the mounting box that I have. So it's big enough for like two of those front runner wolf boxes stacked, although I probably wouldn't stack two of those, but it's big enough for that and two jerry cans on the other side.
So you're doing a hybrid. You're doing roof box and cage.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to stick...
everybody, you're going to be cool with everybody.
That's right. Well, I don't think you would want to stick... I don't think you would want to stick fuel cans in your... You don't want that in your side of your vehicle, and you probably wouldn't want that in your roof box either. So we'll see. The other thing I did recently was, if you've got one of these older 4Runners, you don't even have the key fob, do you?
I was looking into it, and I don't think it was even offered on my year
on
vehicle.
The 98, really?
Yeah.
That'd be surprising. Anyway, I have my truck came with a key fob, but the little loop that holds it to your keychain broke, and I lost it. So I bought a new one, and I was going to reprogram it. And you reprogrammed yours.
Right.
And you said it took you how many beers to actually get that to work?
I think that was a 5-beer project, if I remember correctly. Wow. No, wait. I remember it correctly. That was a 6-beer.
Yeah. So it took 6 beers for you to...
6 beers in 2 days. I think that was 5 beers the first day, and then I gave up and then came back to it and got it on, like, my 3rd try on the second day.
Because you've got to open the door, put the key in, pull the key out, cycle the locks 5 times, close the door, put the key in, put the key out, cycle the locks 5 times, and then... jump through.
Turn it to the on position, cycle the key five, or cycle the locks. Yeah.
It's brutal.
The Toyota Macarena.
Well, you know, I think it makes sense, because you wouldn't want to, like, be returning the shopping cart at the grocery store and have somebody be able to go program a new remote in 4 seconds. But
it is true.
It is still frustrating. Anyway, so I went on Amazon. somebody sent me a text message. Sorry about that. So I found a forum, and I went on Amazon and I found the right key fob. It looks exactly the same. It's nice quality key fob, has all the buttons, and I was going to program the thing in. Well, when you cycle my door locks 3 times, they stick, and they don't cycle anymore. So it wouldn't work. So because the front door wouldn't cycle, the whole thing, procedure wouldn't work. So I went on the forums. I found that there's a little... motor actuator. It's a little bitty square thing with a rod sticking out one end, and you got to replace that, and it's good. Then you're good to go.
Sounds good. It's simple.
It sounds simple. It sounds super simple. You guys remember the text messages when I was replacing that goddamn thing? Anyway, so you got to take the door panel off. You got to peel the plastic away that covers all the linkages. You got to disassemble all the linkages, and then you pull the bolts out, and you pull the whole, like, the lock that holds the door closed, and you pull the wires out, and you pull all that out, and then you have to basically, there's this plastic body that's not meant to be replaced. I think you're supposed to replace the entire assembly. That entire assembly is like $300 or something. Oh, wow. So if you take a knife and you pry that thing open, that motor that I bought off of Amazon that shipped from like Taiwan or something fits right in there. And you put it all back in, and it's good to go. Of course, you got to put it all back together the right way. And you got to put it back in the truck the right way. And every time you don't do something right, you got to take it out and put it back, and take it out and put it back. And then what really got me was I had to make it easier. I pulled the door latch off that actually opens the door, and one of them came off just fine. And the other one, it just destroyed it. It destroyed the tab on the door latch. It destroyed the tab that holds the door latch to the car. It was obliterated. So that was demoralizing. And then I finally got the whole thing to work. You have to, like, tape and zip tie that housing together, or else every time you actuate it, it'll break it loose.
Oh, jeez.
It'll torque itself out. So I got it all back together, put it all back on the car, and I used E6000, the silicone adhesive, all around the door handle, and it's been holding for like a month now, so it should be good to go. Anyway, so if you really absolutely have to have that key fob, like I had to have, you only have to do the driver door. You don't have to do all the doors.
Okay. Gotcha.
Just the driver door, because it would have been a huge blow if it hadn't worked. But I got it after that was all done. I got the thing programmed with 1 beer.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
So,
well, you put in your dues on the other perk.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I sure
exactly,
did.
Exactly.
I sure did.
No, I like having that fob.
It's super nice. The only thing that doesn't work with the one I got from Amazon, or from, actually I got it on eBay. I said Amazon. I got it on eBay. Was the rear door doesn't, rear window
rear
thing
window.
Doesn't work.
Oh, gotcha.
Does yours?
Mine works, yeah. Now, but every once in a while, I don't know if it has to do with the rear door. Like, if I shut that rear tailgate when the window's in a halfway or open position, I think it knocks something loose in there. Because the fob will stop working and the inside button will stop working, and the only way I can get the window to go up and down is to use the key in the back door.
Huh.
And that'll hang on for a couple days, maybe a week, and then all of a sudden everything starts working again. But I think it's when I close that rear tailgate when the window's not all the way up.
Weird.
Well, you shouldn't open the tailgate with the window open at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is that a bad thing to do? I mean,
yeah, because it's not in its frame, and so when you slam that rear door to get the door to shut, it vibrates in there.
And also the weight of the window is down.
Yeah,
it won't. Then your hatch won't stay up. It'll want to drift down.
Cool. Well, I mean, that's all we have. Hopefully we got more to talk about next time.
Oh, I got things I'm doing.
You got things you're doing. So what do you got? Just give us like a bullet list of what you're planning.
So the next thing I want to do, and I don't even know if I'm saying it right, the MOLLE rack or mole.
I think that's what it's called. The military thing that's on backpacks.
It's just basically a screen that I'm going to put behind the passenger seat against the window that you can't see out of while you're driving.
Uh-huh.
So I think that'll be legal.
Right.
But it'll just be somewhere, and you'll see pictures online of people doing this.
There's a number of products like that, yeah.
I'm going to make my own of that. Working on the front of the truck to put some sort of light, simple, cool-looking bumper, mm-hmm. something, so it looks like my truck and not every other.
You've already cut off most of your bumper.
I did. I actually cut the last bit of plastic valance that I can, but I plasti dipped it the other day and put it back on.
Okay.
I think that's what I have coming up so far, and hopefully I won't have time to do that stuff because it's going to snow so much.
It's
going to
snow so much.
I'm going to be
skiing.
Yeah,
check out our Instagram for a picture of Dave 30 feet below the sign he nailed to a tree last year at the high snow mark.
Good stuff.
Ray, what do you got planned?
You know, the next big things I want to do on the truck is definitely suspension related. I want to get new shocks on there and new coils and give it a little bit of a lift there, maybe a couple inches. Hopefully that's something I can pull together for next summer.
Cool.
I kind of want to drive these tires into the ground before I do anything big there. But between that and the rear bumper is where I'd like to start on mine. I'd like to get something more custom there and bring that tire up from down below and put it on the back.
Cool. What do I have planned? Honestly, I don't really have a whole lot of plans. I would like at some point to get rock sliders so that I can potentially jack the vehicle up with a handyman jack. But the other thing I want to do is rebuild my cargo deck with drawers in it and a better slide-out table because it rattles like you would not believe. If there's not a 60-pound cooler on it, it's intolerable.
Louder stereo.
Yeah, louder stereo. Before I say goodbye, I want to give a shout out to some of the resources that we've used to learn much of what we know about 4Runners. Top on the list is top4runners.com. That's top, the number 4, runners.com. That's a website that a guy has put up and has some tips and tricks and fixes and projects, but also a pretty exhaustive history of the 4Runner with all of the model years and all of the ranges and all of the options that all of them have. It's pretty incredible. Another one, of course, is Toyota4Runner.org. That's Toyota-4Runner.org. And that's a forum with specific message boards for all of the different generations of 4Runners. If you don't know about that one, hit that one up. I don't post there much, but I do lurk and I do get a lot of information there. Another good one is the reddit.com 4Runner forum. That's reddit.com/r/4Runner. And there's some good general stoke, some projects. So you get a lot of ideas there and videos and photos and all that stuff. All right. Thanks for joining us on this new segment. Let us know what you think with a comment wherever you feel like commenting. The YouTube, the show notes at allterrainpodcast.com or Instagram or Facebook, or drive to the top of a hill and honk your comments out in Morse code. All Terrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at Reno Collective, a co-working space in Reno, Nevada. If you have something to say, look into a podcast membership where you'll get access to this studio with mics and the mixer.
We also have a podcasting classes and workshops taught by Chris Webster, producer of the Archaeology Podcast Network. And if that's not enough, check out the Northern Nevada Podcasters group on the Facebook. Thanks for listening.